Hi, this is Mark Jeffrey, author of Max Quick Book 2, The Two Travelers, and you're listening to Episode 22 of Murder at Abaddon Hill with P.G. Holyfield.
Welcome to the podcast presentation of Murder at Abaddon Hill, The Chronicles of Aramis Cragan, written and produced by P.G. Holyfield. All right, everybody, welcome back to Murder at Abaddon Hill. I'm going to keep the intro short once more, but stay tuned after the episode for a few short announcements. I do want to take a moment, though, to thank Jay Lynn, better known to the podosphere as the Kingfish from GeekLabel.com. He made his first appearance in the last episode as Constable Tanner. We'll see more of Constable Tanner later in the novel. This week's guest voices are Chris Miller, returning once more as Lord Abaddon, and Indiana Jim as Richard Abaddon. Thanks for the wonderful comments and emails about episode 21. That cliffhanger was fun, but now it's time to find out what has happened to Aramis and Aaron. No need for a story so far. Let's just get on with it. See you on the other side. Enjoy. And now, episode 22 of Murder at Abaddon Hill.
Lord Avedon's Gambit. The icon of Treg, the child of pain. The river is Aja's very breath. Every creature and beast rose from the river to take its place and be named. And as for the Torim, they were never touched by the river. Something other than Aj named them. Tales of the Children.
Aramis approached the northern wall, placed a hand on the door, and leaned in to lay his ear against the wood. But before his ear reached its intended post, the door exploded in on them, sending shards of wood in all directions. Aaron watched as Aramis was thrown back past him along the ground. Dazed for a moment, all Aaron could hear was a horrible sound somewhere between a growl and a hiss, and all he saw was a shape crouching at the now mangled doorway to the watchroom. Not knowing Aramis's condition, Aaron allowed his instincts to take over and charged. Aaron Pertee launched himself at the creature that had just separated one of the secret doors of the watchroom from its hinges. As he propelled himself forward, Aaron only had time to determine two things, that the creature was small and that it was not alone. The light spilling into the watchroom from behind the creature outlined its form but hid its features. Aaron discerned the voice of someone in the next room. Aaron could not make out the words, but the tone was clear. It was one of fear and supplication. Just before Aaron collided into the creature, he realized that he was about to kill someone or something in the home of Lord Avedon. Whether it was that thought or his sudden realization of the creature's size, Aaron chose not to lead with his blade, but with his body. He kept his sword high and threw himself shoulder first into the much shorter creature. Aaron and the growling thing went down in a flailing heap. sliding across the floor of what Aaron now recognized as a bedroom. Moments later, Aaron found himself face down on the wood floor, with the creature on its back beating at his back with its fists. Aaron had not had time to remove his pack, and at the moment, it was saving his life. Instead of reaching around it to get to Aaron's flesh, the creature had decided to tear its way through the leather pack, clawing and pulling at it with its hands. Aaron, sword still in his right hand, used the opportunity to pull his left knee up under him in an attempt to regain his balance. A voice yelled from the distance, but Aaron could not make out what was said. By this time, the creature had ripped most of Aaron's pack from his shoulders, and Aaron felt the creature's claws tearing through the wool and linen covering his flesh. Aaron still could not see the creature, but the screeches and shrieks coming from its mouth could not be human. Aaron then felt something clamp down on his shoulder. As the creature drew first blood from Aaron's upper back, the prince was finally balanced enough to take action. Aaron pushed up with his left leg and arm, rolling back and to the right. As he did so, he brought the pommel of his sword around and connected with the creature's face. The glancing, off-balance blow was just solid enough to displace the creature's hold on the prince's back. Aaron Pertie growled in anger. He did not understand what was happening to him. The shallow wound on his back and shoulder shot searing pain through his upper body. Its intensity shocked Aaron. A rage exploded within him, and Aaron found himself on his feet, standing over the creature. It was human, or at least had been at one time, and it was hunched down on its legs like some sort of frog. The thing had its face turned away from him, but Aaron could see blood dripping from the creature's hand. Aaron barely noticed Richard Avedon rounding the far corner of a bed Aaron hadn't seen before. The pain pulsating from the wound in his back threatened to overwhelm Aaron. It prevented him from thinking further about the consequences. The creature had to be destroyed. Aaron raised his sword. Aramis opened his eyes and found himself laying awkwardly against the far wall of the watchroom. He shook his head and blinked in an attempt to clear it. It took him a few moments to process what had happened. Aramis stuck his hands behind his head and pushed hard against the wall, flipping his legs underneath him, landing deftly on his feet. Just as quickly, he was forced to one knee, nearly crying out in pain, pain from the shard of wood protruding from his left arm. Aramis instinctively opened himself up to the pain, accepting it as part of his being.
Give me strength, Can.
The pain did not leave him by any means, but after a single breath, Aramis gathered himself and focused on the scene before him. Aaron was in the next room, a bedroom by the looks of it, and he was under attack by a creature that had locked itself on Aaron's back. The creature appeared confused by Aaron's backpack. Instead of attacking the exposed areas of Aaron's back and shoulders, it was tearing at the backpack itself.
It is a vampire, Edward Avedon.
Aramis retrieved a sigh that rested against his foot. That simple action made his head throb, each pulse forcing him to focus on the blood seeping around the edges of his wound on his arm. For a moment he considered pulling the dagger-sized shard of wood from his forearm, but he could not tell how much more damage that would cause. Besides, the sight before Aramis left him no choice. Aaron was now up on his feet, having managed to extricate himself from Edvard's attack. His pack was hanging by one strap off of his back, and Aramis could see a red stain spreading across Aaron's left shoulder. The vampire had apparently found flesh. The fingernails of a vampire, even one so newly turned, hardened, and grew to great lengths, eventually resembling bone-sharpened knives. And something about a vampire's nature caused searing pain from even a scratch from one of those nails. Aramis had heard it compared to vinegar being poured onto an open wound. Aaron appeared confused, eyes tearing, blade between himself and Edward Avedon's crouched form. Aramis knew what would happen next. The monk rushed forward, planning on knocking Aaron off balance. But as Aramis approached the entrance to the bedroom, Aaron was already raising his sword above his head. Aramis realized that he would not reach Aaron in time to stop the prince from striking down with his sword. Aramis entered the room and left his feet, hoping his new change in direction might save them all. With his attention solely on Aaron, Edvard Avedon did not see Aramis coming. He felt the man's blood on his hand and wanted its taste, but the blade of the giant before him overcame that desire. Edvard leaped forward, but what began as a lunge at the huge man before him ended up as an awkward dive into the side of what had once been his bed. Darkness surrounded him. As Aaron began bringing down his sword, his intended target was struck full force by some sort of human missile. The impact threw the creature into the side of the nearby bed, leaving another in its place. Aaron could not have halted the descent of his sword under any circumstances, but the pain of his wound had affected his mind and somehow intensified the power behind his blow. As Aaron recognized that it was Aramis Cragan that now lay on the ground beneath him, the prince knew he was about to kill his friend and there was nothing he could do to prevent it. But his sword stopped short of flesh and bone. Aramis, laying on his back, had blocked the prince's blade with the guard of his thigh. Once Aaron saw the monk's all-knowing smirk beneath their crossed weapons, Aaron felt the blood rush from his head. He became lightheaded and fell to the ground. Aramis twisted his thigh as Aaron slumped to the ground, pulling Aaron's blade from his hand. A quick glance confirmed that the vampire had been knocked out by the blow. But that simple fact troubled him, as undead creatures were usually either conscious or destroyed. "There's more to this than I understand." The monk looked over to the oldest Avedon child standing at the foot of Edvard's bed.
"Good evening, Richard."
Aramis could only imagine how Richard was dealing with the sight before him. His vampire brother knocked out against the side of his bed, the monk investigating Greta's murder laying on the floor with a dagger-sized piece of wood protruding from his arm, and the monk's apprentice rolled onto his stomach to ease the pain from the wound on his back.
"Aramis! What? I..."
Richard was dealing with it about as well as Aramis thought he would.
"Help us, Richard."
Aramis had meant for Richard to help him and Aaron with their wounds. But the future Lord Avedon ignored his request for the moment, concentrating on his brother. Richard stepped over Aramis and easily pulled Edvard up onto his bed. In moments, he had his brother's arms and feet shackled to the bed. Still ignoring the two men on the floor, Richard walked to the other side of the bed and picked up a bottle that had been knocked onto its side. He pulled a cork from the bottle and poured an unmeasured amount of liquid into his brother's open mouth. Only then did Richard turn his attention to the two men on the floor. Aramis had by that time retrieved some bandages that had fallen from Aaron's pack. Richard took the bandages from Aramis and began looking at the wound on the monk's arm, but Aramis directed him to help Aaron. Richard moved to Aaron and pulled off the remnants of his pack and then raised his shirt and outer garments over his shoulders. After studying Aaron's back, Richard moved to a chest at the foot of the bed and retrieved some sort of cloth wrap. He unfolded the material. Aramis could see some sort of salve on the cloth. Richard rubbed some of the salve directly onto Aaron's wound and then began wrapping the bandage around Aaron's upper torso. The effects of the salve were almost instantaneous. As Richard wrapped the bandages, Aaron regained both his consciousness and his composure. Aaron winced as Richard pulled the bandages as tight as he could around his body. Aramis saw the fear in Aaron's eyes. Aaron was not only concerned with their presence in Edvard's room, but also about the intricate leather straps that held his scabbard tight to his back, and the sword that would never belong to a monk's apprentice. Aramis signaled back with small hand gestures seen only by Aaron.
"Richard is nearly in as much shock as you are. He probably won't notice a thing."
Richard spoke only after he was satisfied with his work.
It wasn't deep, thank goodness.
Richard's voice confirmed Aramis's theory. The shaky voice possessed none of the bravado that they had heard the day before.
By Osh!
Aaron had finally noticed the dagger-sized splinter sticking out of Aramis's arm. He moved gingerly over to Aramis and gently took his arm.
Let me find my kit.
A few moments later, Aaron had removed the wood from Aramis's arm. The wound was clean, bypassing major blood vessels and nerves, primarily damaging only two of the major flexors of his forearm.
The wood missed nearly everything. You should have had at least one broken bone, Aramis.
As it was missing everything else, it could have done me the courtesy of missing my arm completely. The joke made Aaron smile, even under the circumstances. After cleaning the wound, Aaron pulled out the large needle he would use to stitch Aramis's arm. Ignoring Aaron for the moment, Aramis turned to Richard.
Tell me about Edvard.
Richard sat at the foot of his brother's bed.
There is, or was, a vampire somewhere in or around Avedon Hill. It took Edvard.
Aramis wanted to be closer to Edvard to study him, but Aaron was far from done.
How long ago?
11 days ago, he disappeared. 3 days later, I found him wandering through the secret passages of the manor. Edvard always loved the secret passages. He attacked me, but he was weak. I can only figure that he had been killed and left somewhere, and after he changed, he came back home. I was able to hold him down, and with Karen's help, I got him to his room.
Who else knows about this?
Richard began to answer, but at that moment, Lord Avedon entered the room.
What are you doing, monk?
Aaron, his back to Lord Avedon, was startled by the slam of the door. Aramis did his best to remain calm as Aaron pushed the needle into Aramis's arm, much further than intended.
At the moment, Lord Avedon, I am being sewed upon.
Lord Avedon's eyes shot from one side of the room to the other.
How did you get in here? Through the secret passage?
Yes. Our intention was to determine how someone might have entered Avedon Manor and killed Greta.
Lord Avedon reached down and picked up Aaron's longsword, Wildfire.
This intention led you to attack my son?
Aaron heard the sound of his sword blade sliding against the wooden floor as it was being lifted. He raised his head in alarm. Aramis locked eyes with Aaron, demanding his silence.
We did not attack Edvard. He attacked us.
Not giving Lord Avedon the chance to find his voice, Aramis continued.
Lord Avedon, you have been less than honest with us. So we decided to return to the manor courtyard for another look. While searching the garden, we found a secret door that led us here. We did not know what we would find, but hindsight being what it is, I should not have been surprised by this turn of events.
Edvard did not kill Greta Platt.
Lord Avedon now held the point of the sword up in the air in Aramis's direction. It was shaking in the elder Avedon's hands.
I never said he did.
Lord Avedon lowered the sword slightly.
Lord Avedon, you can do your best to kill us now, or you can let us help you. Either way, please do me the courtesy of answering my questions. When I am finished, if you still feel the need to raise that sword against us, do what you must.
As the two older men spoke, Aaron and Richard continued tending to Aramis. After Aaron had finished stitching Aramis's arm, Richard rubbed a good bit of his salve on the wound and then wrapped it. Lord Avedon looked around as if he wanted a chair.
Did Edvard do that to you?
Richard answered him.
Yes, Edvard and I were on the other side of the room, and Edvard seemed to sense them. He had just awakened, and I was just about to feed him. He must have been more alert this time because he broke free and crashed through his watchroom door before I could stop him.
Feed? You've been feeding him food from the butcher shop? Bloody livers and hearts.
Yes, in addition to the buck I killed 3 days ago.
And Marissa, she gave you something to keep Edward sedated?
Yes.
That explains how easily I knocked out Edward.
Aramis focused on Lord Avedon.
Do you really believe the King's Crown potion will bring your son back?
Richard stood.
How did you know about that?
It seemed that Lord Avedon could no longer be surprised. He ignored his son's interruption.
It's all I've got left, Sir Aramis.
And what about the second half of the legend? If the King's Crown potion is given to a vampire that has tasted human blood.
Lord Avedon slid the point of Aaron's blade across the wooden floor, slowly, oblivious to the damage he was causing to the floorboards.
That is why you were allowed to stay, brother of Aaron. If we can prove that it wasn't a vampire that killed Greta Platt, or that it was the vampire that took Edvard, then I can attempt using the King's Crown potion.
You mean to tell me that Edvard has not attacked you since you captured him? Not scratched you once, drawn blood, and tasted it?
Not even a drop. Richard Avedon, Aramis's words triggering him into action, jumped to his feet.
Arjun's light!
He ran around the other side of the bed and pulled out a bowl that was filled with some sort of liquid. He began washing Edvard's hand, scrubbing away the remnants of blood Edvard had clawed from Aaron's back.
No human blood. Only the blood of the stag, as the legend states.
Aramis, with Aaron's work fully complete, stood and in turn pulled Aaron to his feet.
Fine. Richard, I know you have been pressuring Marissa to complete this potion. Stop. Now. Let her do her work, and do it well, or the potion will surely be worthless. Lord Avedon, you have to promise me. You will not use this potion until we can prove Edvard did not kill Greta Platt.
Lord Avedon nodded and spoke barely above a whisper.
You have my word.
Aramis now stood over Edvard, studying his features.
Good. Now, who else knows about Edvard?
Only Marissa, Karen, Richard, and myself.
Constable Lewis. He does not know.
Lewis? Absolutely not. My head constable has a particular view of the world. He would not approve of my plan to save Edvard.
And that is why you forbade him from continuing his investigation.
Yes, he had similar thoughts about the secret passage that leads from the courtyard to the second floor. He is still angry that I won't allow him to see Edvard, or talk to any of my children, other than John and Julien. He and Edvard are close.
And John and Julien, they do not know. Or any of the staff?
Absolutely not. They have not been allowed inside this room. And since Edvard has always been prone to illnesses, especially since his mother's death, it hasn't been difficult to keep people from this room.
Aramis leaned in close, not able to pass up the opportunity to study an incapacitated vampire. Edvard was only 16 years old, but his face had the sickly pallor of a dying man. Edvard's skin was cold to the touch. Aramis lifted Edvard's top lip and confirmed that Edvard's incisors were only slightly longer than normal. It was a common misconception that all vampires had extremely long incisors, although a vampire's canines did continue to grow the longer they lived. It was rumored that ancient vampires had canines that were so long that they cut through their lower lip and extended even below their chin. Aramis took out his notebook and opened it to a blank page. He pressed the paper against Edvard's upper teeth until they made two marks on the page.
What are you doing?
Richard had regained some of his bravado. Aramis continued as if Richard's tone had not changed.
If I ever get to see Greta's body, I will be able to rule out Edvard as her murderer, if the bite marks on her neck do not match his teeth.
Aramis then turned Edvard's head to the side and studied his neck. Nearly faded were the wounds that had taken his life. Aramis measured the distance between the two primary wounds, noted several smaller bite marks as well, and what remained of a gash between them where blood had been drained from his body.
Whatever did this, bit down hard. Interesting. The space between the primary teeth marks on Edvard's neck are nearly the same as the distance between Edvard's fangs.
Aramis then studied Edvard's left hand. As he had suspected, Edvard's fingernails had already hardened and grown to nearly twice their normal length. Has Edvard spoken since his capture? Has he displayed any signs of intelligence, of memory? Does he recognize you at all?
No, he has not talked, but he does scream in his sleep. He may be dead, but he still dreams. Other than that, he only grunts and shrieks like an animal when he's awake.
But there have been times, especially after he feeds on the blood of the stag, that we see intelligence come back into his eyes.
Aramis thought for a moment. Do not be fooled by that, Lord Avedon. What you know is as Edvard is gone. All that remains is a vampire that wants to be freed. The blood is the key. Most vampires only become as intelligent as the sewer vamps I have faced. It is simple breeding. Animals killing, creating more animals like themselves. If Edvard did kill Greta, then the sedative you are giving him only serves to prevent him from killing again. Aramis rubbed his forehead, thinking through the scenario even further. Although, if Edvard was killed by a vampire master, and that vampire master offered his or her own blood to Edvard in return, if the rumors are true, in that case, the intelligence you see in his eyes could be that of Edvard. But his memories, his intelligence, those will only return completely if he drinks the blood of a human. Richard's face brightened as he followed Aramis's words.
So that means he couldn't have killed Greta. He would be able to speak to us if he had drained her blood.
No, I did not say that. If Edvard was killed by a common vampire that found its way through the tunnels into Avedon Hill, Edvard's memories and intelligence are forever gone, whether he killed Greta or not. Aramis paused, his mind still wrapping its arms around this new information. And if Edvard was killed by a vampire master, your potion may be all that is keeping him from speaking to you. Aramis stared into Richard's eyes. And if he does speak to you, Richard, before you even realize it, you will have unlocked his chains and he will be drinking from your throat. Lord Avedon raised an empty hand.
That's enough, Cragen.
Aramis bowed his head. Of course, Lord Avedon. I do have one bit of good news for you, if you can call it that. The reason we were in the courtyard to begin with, we were able to reach the manor courtyard directly from the catacombs underneath Avedon Hill. Richard's jaw dropped. Lord Avedon only shook his head from side to side. The elder Avedon found his voice first.
The grate in the courtyard? But that has been locked for generations.
From this side? Yes. But we had no problems bypassing the mechanism from below. We also found evidence that someone or something had been in those passages recently and had attempted to cover their tracks. Lord Avedon smiled for the first time in their presence.
That is great news. That all but proves it wasn't Edvard.
Aramis shook his head from side to side. I am sorry, Lord Avedon, but not necessarily. It just means that someone definitely knows how to get into and out of the manor without being seen. As Richard told us, Edvard knew those secret passages better than most. Lord Avedon's smile left his face as quickly as it had appeared.
Very well. It is late. You should go back to the inn and continue your investigation tomorrow morning. Richard will show you out.
He leaned Aaron's sword hilt against the edge of the bed and sat down beside his unconscious son. Richard extended his hand towards the door, indicating they should leave. If you do not mind, Lord Avedon, I would like to take another look at Greta's office on our way out. I promise not to disturb you or any other members of your family. That way, Richard can stay here with you if you like. Lord Avedon shook his hand dismissively.
Fine. Just go, monk.
One last question. Do any of the tunnels under the town lead outside the town walls?
None that I know of. We never wanted to provide the means to bypass the town gates.
Aramis retrieved Aaron's sword, and the two men started towards the door of the bedroom. Aramis couldn't stop thinking about the timing of Edvard's disappearance, return, and the date of Greta's death. Aramis paused after a few steps and turned back to Lord Avedon. Lord, you neglected to mention the one other person that knew about Edvard. A confused look crossed Lord Avedon's face, but only for a moment.
Yes, of course. Greta knew.
Aramis lowered chin to chest once more, turned, and then followed Aaron out of Edvard's bedroom. Thanks for sticking around, everybody. I've got a few announcements and then I'll let you go. First of all, I want to say thanks to everyone that came out to Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh, North Carolina to listen to the panel on new media that I got to do with Mer Lafferty and Alyssa Lorello. Stacy Cochran, author and self-publishing guru, put the panel together and it was a great success. There were between 50 and 60 in attendance, and I'll be posting the audio and video as a future podcast episode. Thursday, I leave for Balticon with my lovely wife, Liza. Been looking forward to this for over a year now. I'm going to get to meet several podcasters I haven't met before, such as Nate Lowell, Heather Welliver, and my nemesis, Chris Lester. I'll also get to see a lot of great people I haven't seen in months, such as T. Morris, J.C. Hutchins, Matt Wallace, Earl Newton, Rich Siegfried, the guys from Geek Radio Daily. Actually, I'm ready to go right now. I'll be on several panels, so hopefully I'll have some audio to share in the future on that as well. Okay, it's time to start drumming up some feedback and reviews for the podcast. So on that note, I've decided to hold a little contest. Anyone that has left me a comment on the Cairn line, which is 704-315-5884, you're already entered. Anyone that calls the Cairn line to ask a question or leave a comment between now and the end of the month gets entered. And lastly, if you leave a review on iTunes before the end of May, I'll enter you in the contest as well. So, what does the winner get? A Murder at Avedon Hill t-shirt from my Spreadshirt store over at pgholyfield.spreadshirt.com. And I'll post more on this contest on the website once I get back from Balticon. Okay, last thing for my thank yous. Thanks to Mark Jeffrey for the intro bumper today. Check out the Max Quick series over at maxquickseries.com. And I've already thanked the guest voices, but lastly I want to thank once again Natalie Metzger for her latest piece of Murder at Avedon Hill inspired art. You can see it over at the website, and I'm going to be putting up a specific art page on the site as well. So much to do and so little time. So, until next time, thanks again for listening. See ya.
Do you remember what happened on April 8th at exactly 3:38 in the afternoon when time stopped? If you do, then you remember Max Quick. You remember Quantum Books, Sky Chambers, and a strange undiscovered planet in our own solar system. Hi there, this is Mark Jeffrey, author of Max Quick, Book 1, The Pocket and the Pendant. You may remember this book is one of the original three books on Podiobooks.com, along with Scott Sigler's Earthcore and T. Morris's Moravi. Now, on May 1st, 2008, please join me for the world premiere of Max Quick, Book 2, The Two Travelers. 5 quiet years have passed in Starlin, California. But all of that is about to change. Max Quick, Book 2, The Two Travelers, May 1st, exclusively on Podiobooks.com. For more information on the Max Quick series, please visit MaxQuickSeries.com.
The President of the United States is dead. He was murdered in the morning sunlight by a 4-year-old boy. So began J.C. Hutchins' Seventh Son Podiobook Trilogy, the most popular podcast novel series in history. Last December, the trilogy concluded. The heroes were triumphant, or so we think. But now, it's time to go back and reveal moments in the Seventh Son story that were merely hinted at in the original trilogy. Welcome to Seventh Son Obsidian. J.C. Hutchins has opened up his Seventh Son universe and invited the seven biggest names in podcast fiction to chronicle a nationwide blackout that rocked America during the Seventh Son trilogy. Seventh Son Obsidian features short stories from these award-winning and nominated authors: Michael A. Stackpole, Scott Sigler, T. Morris, Mer Lafferty, Matt Wallace, Mark Yoshimoto Nemkov, and Christiana Ellis. And even more tales from these trailblazing podcast entertainers: Evo Terra, Dan Klass, Wichita Rutherford, George Probb, TD0013, Soccer Girl, and the cast of the radio adventures of Dr. Floyd. Obsidian also features dozens of audio and video recordings, stories of the blackout as told by its victims, created by Seventh Son fans across the globe. On May 31st, the lights go out. America becomes a police state. Because when the power fails, chaos reigns. Subscribe now to Seventh Son Obsidian, or catch up with the original Seventh Son trilogy experience at jchutchins.net.
Managers, do you have problems with workers coming in late, leaving early, and taking too long of a lunch break? Let's face it, employees these days are not hardworking. They're too busy checking email, reading blogs, chatting with their new friend in Sweden, who's really a hairy guy from Duluth, or, God forbid, listening to podcasts, to be of any real use to you. This is where Zombank can help you. We are, among other things, a zombie placement service that will supply you with workers that will work tirelessly around the clock. They don't need breaks. They don't need social security. And if there's a workplace accident, there's none of that pesky short-term disability or lawsuits. Simply return the damaged zombie to us, and you'll be supplied with a new one. Think of Zombink when you see that lifeless, uninterested look in your living employee's eyes. At least with zombies, that lifeless, uninterested look will be on the face of a hard worker. Zombink can supply you with workers for construction, farming, security, janitorial services, and web design. And we're adding new services every month. Please visit our website at zombink.net to order your own service today. Clients of Zombink are responsible for the well-being of their human employees, customers, and visitors. Employ zombies at your own risk. All mutilations, dismemberments, death, or the transfer of the zombie curse to the responsibility of the client, not Zombink. You're hiring zombies. What do you expect?
The third annual Parsec Awards are a celebration of excellence in speculative fiction podcasting. Nominations are open through June 15th. Please visit www.parsecawards.com to find out how to nominate your favorite speculative fiction podcasts. That's www.parsecawards.com.
You've been listening to Murder at Avedon Hill, a podcast novel written and produced by P.G. Holyfield. Please visit pgholyfield.com for more information on this novel and the author. Most of the music in this podcast generously provided by Shira Common through Magnatune.com. Magnatune.com, they are not evil. Additional music generously provided by Kevin MacLeod through his website at incompetech.com. Be sure to check out Murder at Avedon Hill at podiobooks.com, and if you are so inclined, please post a review at iTunes, at Podcast Pickle, or at podiobooks.com. Audio comments about the podcast can be left on the Cairn line at 704-315-5884, or go to pgholyfield.com and click on the Call Me button to leave comments. This podcast is copyright 2007-2008 by P.G. Holyfield and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 U.S. license.